Welcome, Jets fans, to another review. Another review of another loss for the Newcastle Jets. We're here to talk about the Adelaide match from Friday night. And joining me this week are two despondent characters, much like Ilario was on our preview episode. First of all, Emma, how are you?
Good. Alive. Happy.
Good. I hope that you don't take offence to me not calling you doctor. I noticed that Grant does that all the time.
It's pretty much the only time I ever get called doctor, so it's kind of exciting when it happens.
Oh, well, then
but that's
can...
okay. You don't have to.
Well, then, well, we will address you as doctor from now on. And I'm also, we're also joined this week by Grant. Grant, welcome back, and thanks for joining us, mate.
Yeah, my pleasure.
All right. Well, let's get into it then. We'll jump into the review of the Jets 1-0 loss to Adelaide.
Nordstrand makes so many clever runs and the header. Oh! John Hall makes a miraculous save, but he's surely come off second best after running into the upright.
Well, I thought it was in. And what about the awareness of Nordstrand, who knows Hall's off his line? And that ball, I thought it was destined to go in. And in the end, it's not only a very good save. You can talk about him being out of position if you want, but a terrific save, but he's absolutely smashed into the post. There's the ball through Nordstrand. He knows exactly what he's trying to do.
Oh.
Terrific save, and wow. Side of his head straight into the post.
Oh,
no, the front.
How does he respond with all the pressure of the penalty kick? And he dispatches it into the bottom corner. The captain on the Knights, and Karuska showing the passion that Adelaide United fans have been crying out for. They lead the Jets in Friday night football.
Well, he keeps his composure. And, you know, that was a big moment. Here's the fantastic run from Elrich. Newcastle was saying, is he falling down before he's going through there? And it's a brilliant run, and Grant Ames has seen enough. And there's composure from Karuska. A big moment in context of the pride these players need to play for now.
A couple of times. As it stands, with that live ladder, they'll drop out of the six. And Marnley lays in the bad books here. After felling Kim Jae-sung. That's another player ruled out of the derby. So things looking up for the Mariners. And they're on a roll at the moment. Oh, wow. Looks worse on that replay. Kim Jae-sung was a sitting duck and Marley Lay goes in with the studs. Nikola Mile-Uznic. Oh! Didn't like the treatment one little bit. Went into bat for his teammate, did Wayne Brown. Riley McGree. And it's all kicking off. Tensions boiling over at Cooper's.
This could have been... should never have happened. I'm surprised an Adelaide player didn't kick the ball out. They were man down. And this was all avoidable. It's not a good challenge.
How will the referees assess this one? Kurt Ames and his assistants.
And thank you very much there to Fox Sports for the use of their audio in that little presentation of, I guess, the lowlights of the match. Emma, it was our third away game in succession that the Jets had the opportunity to cement a spot in the top six, really force their claim, but they failed to capitalise again.
I think we more than failed to capitalise. I think we failed abysmally to capitalise. It was a pretty poor showing, I think, this week, unfortunately, when we really needed it. So can I just say again, sports psychologists, we need some.
I think we need more than sports psychologists at the moment, because Adelaide is almost becoming a bit like Perth, Grant, where it's now over 400 minutes or something like that we've scored over there. We have a terrible record, and I guess we could have almost seen this coming.
Yeah, look, I'm starting to lean towards Dr. Emma's that prognosis of getting in a sports psychologist. When you think about it, it was interesting in the pre-game interview with Fox Sports, Mark Jones said it was great to be able to put the same team on the park for the first time, two games in a row. And so when you think about that, that's a team that went up against Victory and held Victory to a nil-all draw on what I thought was a great game. So you think, yep, we've got something here, but go over there to Adelaide. And again, beating Perth, you think this would be the perfect opportunity in their minds to go over to do it. And, you know, they play like they did.
I mean, you touched on it there, Grant. Emma, from the offset, Adelaide looked like they were really up for the game. They were aggressive in their tackles. Taylor Regan early on going through Morten Nordstrand, and in my opinion, lucky to escape a yellow card. But it was an interesting decision by Mark Jones to name an unchanged lineup. And do you think that, in a way, played into Adelaide's hands at all?
I'm going to answer the first part first. I think Adelaide's strategy was go in, go hard. I actually tweeted about 5 minutes in that the plan was clearly hurt Nobby lots and hurt him early. So they were going for that physical match. I was really surprised when I saw the lineup and it was unchanged. I would not have left it unchanged. I think that they definitely could have made some better decisions. I don't think I would have started Lele, but, you know, for commercial reasons, it seems he's going to start. I would have started Wayne Brown for sure in that game.
I mean, Lele's selection, given that we were quite critical of him on the pod last week and his selection, and the rumours are going around that there are bids in line, though that has been dismissed by Jets management on Twitter. Grant, would you have looked to make any changes to... I mean, it's always wonderful in hindsight, but do you think that Mark Jones got the selection of the team right on Friday night?
Well, look, I suppose if you look at the situation where we come off and had opportunity to score and take 3 points in Victory, as a coach, I can understand why he's decided to do it again and play that same team, starting lineup. But I think, as in what happened in Victory, the same mistakes were made, and I know we're going to talk about it as we go through the game, but the coaching mistakes were that I myself was making comment, and my wife was making comment, and people on Twitter were making comment that, you know, Lele looks cooked. Why don't we replace him? But we didn't. He played on and on and on to the point where he went missing in action in the middle of the park. And, I'm not surprised that Jonesy started the same team, but the same tactics got us a defeat this time, not a draw.
Adelaide certainly seemed to have the dominant first half, but I was quite pleased with the Jets' first half performance. I thought, I guess, when compared to the second half, that it was the better of the two halves of performances, Emma. I mean, we did have the two highlights, Marley Lay producing a really good save from John Hall outside the box, and also an even better save by John Hall, a stunning save, and very brave as well. Which was the highlight of the first half, from a quickly taken free kick by Bugard over the top to Nordstrand, his looping header forcing a save by Hall and subsequently crashing into the post. Really brave keeping from the young Adelaide stopper.
It's almost more annoying, though, isn't it, to play a good first half and a bad second half. If you start badly, you know, it could be you haven't taken the right game plan in, or you haven't adjusted to the opposition. If you start well and then finish badly, which is what we did, that's just embarrassing. That is bad direction. That's bad attitudes. There's something terrible going on there. And, yeah, John Hall braining himself was incredible. That was incredibly entertaining to watch. I feel really bad saying that, but it was. But if we couldn't capitalise on A, having Galekovic out and John Hall in, and B, after John Hall has brained himself, I thought they were going to send him off for concussion, because that was a fair whack, and I actually question the A-League's concussion rules that he wasn't properly checked for concussion. I think there should have been a longer delay for that. But if we can't capitalise on that, what are we doing? Where are our heads?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, it... it was really surprising, Grant, that he jumped up and was back on board so quickly. But we would have hoped that we would have been testing him at least shortly after the medical attention that he received.
And look, that was one of the things, I suppose, throughout the game, you know. The other thing, he did whack his head on it, and perhaps the only saving grace that his body took all the impact and rattled the goalpost rather than his head, because if it was his head that did that, I'm quite sure it would have split it like a melon. And I do agree that there didn't seem to be too much going on with regards to looking at it from a concussion point of view. So, my comment about the body hitting harder than the head was seen on replay after I've watched it again on replay. From a doctor's point of view or somebody at the ground, it was an instant and he would have just had to go on, you would have thought there'd be a stronger process to go through. But I found a couple of times, there was one instance there, and I wondered what was going on. There was one instance there where a ball was put through, I think, by Mullen, and Nobby's gone for it, and then pulled out. And even the commentators were saying, did he think he was offside, or did he think he was not going to get there? You know, from looking at it, it looked clearly he could have got there, but he just sort of pulled out. Well, I don't know what was going through his head. There was no flag up, and it was quite obvious. That's not normal for Nobby. He'll go and he'll look at the linesman looking for the flag and still keep going. But on this occasion, he pulled up. And there's a couple of times there throughout the game where the ball's gone into the box and our players stood there and watched.
Yeah, I think we were our own worst enemy quite a few times during that match where the ball wasn't moved quickly enough. When the ball was moved quickly enough, it was either at the player, not in front of them, or it was behind them, and it forced it to check our run. And that just seemed to be the entire game. And look, I guess second half the Jets' performance is kind of like our performance on this pod. It's wasn't so polished, and I wouldn't say unprofessional. I mean, we're pretty unprofessional because I've forgotten to actually do the opening question, and I'm sure that there is people at home who are saying, "Where's the opening question? You've done it again." And I have done it again, and I'm really sorry. So we are going to stop that there. We're going to go jump on and talk about the second half in just a second, but we are going to jump back in true pod style to the opening question. So, Emma.
Burns can edit it, surely.
Oh, well.
He won't. He'll revel in your forgetfulness.
Yeah, where's the fun in that? With payphone booths becoming less prevalent in society these days, where would the modern-day Superman get changed to go and save the world?
See, I'm thinking that he wouldn't try and hide it in the modern-day world. Modern-day Superman would have an Instagram account, and he would be doing a selfie every location he got changed to go and save someone. So it would still be related to the phone, but it would be an Insta selfie.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Grant, what about you?
No, I don't know. Superman needs his anonymity. So with the demise of the phone booth, that was on every street corner in the day, he would now be using the restroom or toilets from a coffee shop. Because nowadays you can't go 200 metres without walking past a coffee shop.
You pretty much stole my answer there.
But I thought it all by myself too.
Oh, very good.
But that's what I think Superman would
probably
do.
A Gloria Jeans in Australia, wouldn't it be? Yeah, probably be a Gloria Jeans.
Or his Superman, he could just go up because humans do not look up.
Well,
you just went above a house and got changed up there. No one's going to look because humans never look up.
See, I'm going to take a slightly different slant on this question. I'm going to look and say that Clark Kent's profession was a news reporter. Okay, he worked for a newspaper. So journalists these days are not necessarily tied to their desks. They are out there reporting, taking their own photos because, look, let's face it, it's a cutthroat industry, the journalism front. So I reckon he's probably going to get changed in his car.
Just something that, along the lines of this question, and I know your question only comes through later this afternoon, But I read an article on Facebook, so therefore it must be true. They've done some testing, and it's quite plausible that just by putting glasses on and changing your outfit, people would not recognise you. So the idea of Superman and Clark Kent not being recognised as the same person throughout history is quite plausible.
There you go. Only people who don't know you. You're not going to fool the people you work with.
I didn't read that far into the article. It's got too boring. You just
skimmed it.
That's
well, anyway, so that was a much better chat than talking about our first half, because it's going to go downhill again from here, because we now move back onto the Jets' second half. And look, for me, the goal was coming for Adelaide pretty much from the kickoff, even late in the second half. And I guess the Jets' fears were compounded in the 61st minute when Tarik Ulrich was allowed to stroll into our box unchallenged and subsequently ran between Nigel Bugard and Dan Mullen, which is just screams penalty, Emma.
Yeah, well done to Ulrich for milking that, because he wasn't taken out. He saw Boogs flat-footed and went for it. And, you know, it getting between the two of them was a genius move on his half, and he should never have been allowed to get that far. But, yeah, no, he wasn't fouled. He fouled himself, but Boog should never have put himself in that situation. He was flat-footed, and he had no option other than to stand there while Ulrich bounced into him. So, yeah, well done to him. I wish we could milk penalties that well.
Grant, do you have any thoughts to add on to what Emma said?
Oh, yes. As I've been known to do, I did watch this on slow-mo. And I had to put it on slow-mo. Now, when you consider, what was it, Beef missed one or two penalties in the derby, I believe.
Yep.
Quite possibly.
Yep.
Ones that I was looking at and screaming that that's got to be a penalty. He stuck his foot out, sir. I looked at the penalty that Ulrich milked and did a very good job. I agree with Dr. Emma. He's gone in. He's had Mullen sort of trying to climb over his back. But then you see Mullen starting to pull away, and Ulrich has gone down on the right, faded on the right foot into Boogs. But if you slow it down, there is the slightest, I mean, it's only the slightest hint of movement from Bugard. Now, there's no way in the world you could see that in normal movement, because I watched it half a dozen times. I was doing the ironing this afternoon, so I watched it half a dozen times, and I couldn't see it. And I'd stop it and do it again at normal speed. And then until it slowed it down, I realised, oh, yeah, there was a slight movement there, but it was imperceptible. So, yeah, look, I can understand why Bugart was so, so upset at the when he was being interviewed about it, that's for sure.
Very detailed analysis there, mate. That's the sort of detailed review and tactical analysis that you get here on the Jet Stream. So thank you very much. It was fantastic.
Well, but that's exactly what I meant when I said he was caught flat-footed, though.
Yeah. So as the game progressed, we had three bookings to players that were bordering on the line of an automatic one-week suspension. The first was Marley Lay, who went through the Adelaide's Korean import with a really bad tackle. It was actually a pretty shocking tackle there on Kim Jae-sung. Wouldn't you agree, Grant?
It was, and he could have been, I think he himself lucky it was only yellow. The left foot came in after the first foot was in studs up, and the left foot came in as well studs up, and it didn't look like there was any attempt to get it out of the road. I know it was pretty quick, but I think I've seen other players be red carded for that, so Mark can be maybe a little bit thankful for that.
And Emma, not long after that, Riley McGree went through Marley Lay out on the Jets' left wing, and Wayne Brown took exception to it and started to show it a handbags at 10 paces there with McGee, and a bit of a hoo brouhaha on the field. Lucky to just receive a yellow, do you think, or could he have been sent, in your opinion?
I think both of them were lucky just to receive yellows. McGree for the original tackle and Wayne Brown for the retaliation. But that said, if you're not going to give McGree a red for that tackle, you're clearly not giving reds for anything. So fine that no one got a red. But yeah, pretty unhappy that Wayne Brown is going to be out next week on his fifth yellow. That's really bad timing coming up to the Mariners. Lele, I'm not so sad about. He can have a week off. I think he's ready for that. But both of them, that's rough.
He might use that week off too.
What I was going to say, though, if you see the passion and the intensity in Brown's eyes, if you got into trouble in a pub one night, you'd want him behind you, wouldn't you?
And the mongrel in me does love that, that he got in there. And, you know, the Novocastrian in me is like, you get in there, Brownie. But then the sensible football-loving part of me is like, that was so not worth the week off, especially for the derby.
All 5 foot.
I would have rather seen him fight O'Donovan.
Or 5 foot nothing of him going through young Riley McGree as well. That was really good. Nigel Bugard also did receive his booking for the challenge on Tarik Elrich and that resulted in the penalty. So he will also miss this weekend's match. One that I guess wasn't booked that may have attracted some more attention was in the 80th minute, Andrew Hull receiving a booking. Escaping a booking for an elbow. Challenging for a ball out in the wing. Do you think he was lucky there, Grant, to escape a red?
No. He was not unlucky because it wasn't deserving, mate. Again, if you look at it...
By a second yellow.
Red by a second, no. It was not... wasn't cardable. If he had his arm out... Admittedly, he put his arm out to block Elrich... for going on the inside of him, on his left-hand side. If you have a look at it, Elrich ducks down into that arm and then throws his head back like he's been hit. That's not... The arm didn't move in any direction. It went straight out to block him, and Elrich just come down, moved his head towards into the arm, and then thrown it back as if he's been hit.
Mm. Can I disagree with that? I think we've seen the exact same move get cards in the A-League this year, and... Hull did a look over his shoulder. He knew Elrich was there and he threw his arm out anyway. The only thing that saved him is that his arm was straight and it wasn't an elbow. That is literally the only thing that saved him. And I don't actually see within the rules how that saved him. Like, to say, he was stopping Elrich from getting around. If you're stopping someone from getting around with their face, that's still not very sportsmanlike.
Well, that's the point, Emma. The arm was below his neck. And Elrich has ducked down onto it. That's my point. That's what I'm saying. I looked at that because I've got this argument going on with my son about these the same thing about the previous red cards that have come out. The Hull's arm was from his shoulder, Elrich's right shoulder down underneath his neck, and Elrich goes down and basically puts his chin into the arm, then throws his head back. He's diving for it.
Okay. I do think Elrich milked it. I don't disagree with that. But I do think Hull was lucky to get away with it. Because if you throw your arm up behind you and move backwards into someone recklessly, especially if they're a good actor, you are lucky to get away with it. Whether it was right that you should or shouldn't get away with it, you're still lucky to get away with it. He shouldn't have put himself in that position, in my opinion.
If you'd have got a second yellow, you could have understood it. Right, but wouldn't have been deserved. And I say the referee...
But that doesn't mean he's not lucky to have gotten away with it. He's still lucky that he didn't get carded, whether or not it would have been deserved or not, because exact same move has been carded multiple times this year. And from the ref's point of view, without a slow motion replay, it very well could have looked malicious, especially with Elrich's good acting.
Oh, look, it did. Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I suppose this time the penny dropped our way. And that ref wasn't given red cards out for anything last night on Saturday night. So,
fair call. If he's not gonna card studs up, he's not gonna card anything.
That's right.
All right. Well, we might move on from that. So, Mark Jones was obviously disappointed with his team's performance, and we're now going to hear from the Jets coach and his thoughts on the game in the after-match press conference.
Disappointed to concede a goal. It was a soft goal. It should have been met outside the box, and then it was dubious whether or not it was a penalty. But disappointed with our execution in the final third. It was a game that I thought we should have won, and I thought we had enough ball and possession, certainly in the first half, to, you know, we were never in any real danger, and then we lose all 3 points.
Did that game on Monday suck anything out of you?
We weren't as silky and as didn't execute as well as we normally did in the final third, but, you know, whether that's from fatigue or whether that's just a lack of intensity and execution or not, I'm not sure.
So what did you think of Pep?
I'm not sure that would be given many times.
So it's disappointing.
Very disappointing.
Probably fair to say it was a physical match. Do you think it was openly physical?
I thought it was overly fierce. Certainly, I think the intent was there right from the very start on from Adelaide's behalf, and I think things should have been pulled up early, and then perhaps there would have been less of it.
Has that been like the sort of the standard set from round one, where a lot of things go by and then it gets nasty towards the end?
No, I think things are black and white, and if it's a foul, a foul. If it's in the first minute or the 91st minute, it's a foul, and if it's a yellow card, it's a yellow card, and there's no room to be able to let some things go and other things not. You know, if it's inconsistency, is probably the most frustrating part.
I think
your strike
cost a lot.
I think it was quite obvious how we got dealt with, and I think there were some bad fouls there that deserved a yellow card, but I'm not the referee.
You're, I think, just out of finals contention. Out of
probably
finals.
Need to rephrase that. We're just out of the top
out of
six, I perhaps.
Sorry.
Yeah.
At the moment, if Wanderers don't lose this weekend, do you think this match was the one that you should have been winning?
I thought we should have won the game, yeah, and I'm disappointed not to have won the game, but if we have to go back and beat Central Coast at home next week now. It's a long way from over.
Okay, so there's the thoughts of Mark Jones on how the team went. And Emma, who was your man of the match?
Shit, I didn't even think about this. I was so despondent. Jesus, man of the match.
I thought he was pretty poor.
Jesus?
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
All right, let's going to come back to you, Emma. Grant, who's your man of the match?
Most probably in a game like that, it was a defender, and it was Hoffman.
Okay.
I thought he had a cracking game. He got himself up where it was necessary, and was it Sirio that he had?
He was looking after O'Doherty for a fair while, and then he had the other winger who was on. Oh, geez, names escapes me. Yeah. Nikola Milutinović.
Anyway, I thought he had them both tied up and did quite a good job. So for me, it was Hoffy.
Yep. That's not a bad shout. Emma, have you you thought anyone further than Jesus?
I still don't want to pick. I'm not sure I've got one. Am I allowed to abstain?
No.
I'll
come back to you in just a sec then. Again. You're down to your last straw, by the way. I'm picking Steven Ugarkovic. I thought that he had a good game in midfield and was looking promising. He was looking forward and looking to move the ball quickly. Just a shame that quite a few players weren't on the same wavelength as him during the game. I think Hoffman is also a good shout, and despite his penalty, I'd probably say that Nigel Bugard's added another striker to his ever-growing collection in his cargo pants, because Sergio Sirio didn't have a shot at all during the match. So that was good to see. Emma, third time's a charm. Who is your man of the match?
I'm going to go Poliak again.
Okay. Any reason? Or you just haven't thought that?
I was disappointed. No, I think when Poliak has a good game is when I don't notice him. I think that's the key to doing well in his position. You only notice him when he screws up. So if I didn't notice him, he must have been doing well. But also, they all sucked, so...
You sucked, you sucked, you sucked, you sucked.
They all sucked. Okay.
It's like picking the least worst.
Fair enough.
Sorry. I'm unhappy with this game.
So we haven't quite reached the half hour mark in talking at the moment, and that's not really a good length for this pod that's renowned for going over an hour quite regularly. So we're going to talk for quite a few more minutes, and it's going to be contributor's choice tonight. We have a number of topics here on the discussion board, as you can all see in this audio medium. So I'll read them out for you, and Emma, I'm going to get you to pick the first topic that we're going to talk about for a while. The first one is the Jets' inability to seemingly strike a killer blow and get into the top six. Well, or, as it's called on the board, forever seventh. The next topic is the away game. We have four remaining games of our seven away from home, and we haven't won away from home in about five matches. The next one is the Jets drawing blanks. Our free scoring ways have seemingly shut up shop for a while. We'll talk about that. We can talk about how we replaced Lele, Bugard and Brown, or we can talk about the substitutions are for rookies, Mark Jones's use of the bench. Emma, your choice. What do you want to hear?
Substitutions are for rookies for 100. Thanks, Dave.
Take it away. So Mark Jones has come into, I guess Mark Jones has come into a bit of heat over the last couple of weeks about his use of the bench, both in terms of the substitutions being made, the defensiveness of his tactics, and also the times at which he's making them. Do you think that that's having an effect? And I mean, you're often very vocal, Emma, about using the Jets, using the substitutions bench as a part of your overall game management. How do you think he's using it, and how do you think he could be doing it better?
Well, I'm vocal about everything, so what else is new? The point is, he's not using it. He is using the bench very poorly. He's leaving subs way too late, not just in this game, the last game, the game before. Subs, it's becoming that idea of you're on the bench as a punishment. Most weeks, I'm not even sure why he's picked the bench he's got. He's often got two players for the same position and no cover for another position. But my biggest gripe of the last few weeks is just way too late on the subs. When you're one down or deadlocked, you don't wait until 80-odd minutes to put a man on. And the last couple of weeks, I have not understood the game plan with subs at all. There's been players who look like they're begging to come off, and then players who still look like they've got plenty of legs in them getting taken off instead of them. It is a mystery to me what is going on. And I would love someone to explain it to me, because I don't get it at all.
Grant, I ran some stats for the Newcastle Football.net forums, and I'll update that this week. And there's now been... Oh, actually, hang on. Round 19. No, I haven't. This was back after the round 19 clash against Melbourne Victory. So... we've now had 58 substitutions. Of those, we've had players that come on with less than 10 minutes. 20 of those players come on with less than 10 minutes of the game left. I mean, that's just over a third of our substitutions, or about a third of our substitutions. Do you think that we're leaving it too late for these guys to actually have some sort of impact on the game?
Look, bringing a sub on so late is a perfectly good tactical solution for slowing the game down when you're winning.
So, but we're not making it at the time. But we're not making it at the time when we're winning.
That's dead right. So what the hell is he doing? You know, we there was a couple of a while ago, I can't remember the game, but a couple of games where we're in front, or we're still chasing the game. We're throwing attacking players on. We're throwing them on at the 60th minute. But that was quite a few games ago. But now we seem to be waiting, as your stats are showing, later and later in the game when our people are spent. You know, there's no rhythm in the game. You put Coco's a great example of this, right? Everybody's sweating on Coco to come and deliver the goods, as we all thought he was going to do. When you stick the man on the 80th minute, when everybody that's supposed to deliver the balls to him, his legs are too tired to get him there, what good is it? He then comes off at the end of the game and people look at his running around, couldn't get the ball. He's got to go and try and create his own opportunities, but he's got no support when he does that. So, this is the only time you should be bringing players on late in the game is when you're trying to slow the play down, or you want to cruise to the end of the game and give somebody, 5 minutes at the end or something. But if you're trying to win games and you're chasing games, those players should be coming on with 20 minutes to go, 25, 30 minutes to go.
I guess with the substitutions that we've seen quite a few times as well, I mean, this comes back to your point, Emma, about the selection on the bench being negative or being perceived as negative or defensive. We are making like-for-like substitutions. So a favourite of his at the moment, of Mark Jones at the moment, is Mateo Poliak off, John Katrumba's on. And Katrumba seems to be he has appeared consistently off the bench this year. But we don't seem to be looking to make the attacking changes. We are simply just changing like for like with the hope that something's going to change. Is there something in our bench not allowing us, Emma, to have an option B, or change the way that we're looking to play the game to try and mix it up and get something on? For example, throwing Coco on for maybe Poljak or Jugarkovic late on in the half. So we move with two up top and three at the back, or just the one holding midfield, so that we can look to try and get something from the game.
I'm sure that against the Victory, something happened and the sub plan changed. I'm 100% certain that that's what happened. But against Adelaide, I felt like he had a plan about who he was going to sub, and he was sticking to that no matter what the scoreline was. To take Poljak off both this week and last week, Poljak didn't look tired. Changing like for like, as you said, didn't seem to be a benefit in that moment. Both times Poljak got subbed the last 2 weeks, I've been like, what? Why would you take him off? Both last two games, I've thought Wayne Brown coming on should have been the first and the early sub. So I'm not sure, because I think in the Victory week, he clearly changed the plan, probably to his detriment. But this week, I feel like it was the complete opposite, that he stuck with a plan to change Poljak for Katrumbas. That was going more defensive, if anything, if that's going to deviate from like for like. But Brown should have come on way earlier. Lele should have gone off sooner, both weeks, last 2 weeks.
Okay. Grant, the starting lineup for the last probably four weeks has been very settled. Apart from the suspension to Steven Jugarkovic, there really hasn't been any changes. Do you think that it may be a case here where Jones is looking at the starting lineup and thinking he wants to give them as much time to execute the game plan as they can before looking to make those substitutions more as a desperation move, more so than a tactical change?
I think you're on the money there, David, because I don't think he's had the luxury right from the beginning of the season to have a steady formation, playing the same players, week in, week out, like most other teams are able to do. We started off with those five players out, etc. I found it interesting that I didn't realise that it was Victory's game and the game against Adelaide was the first time we played the same starting lineup. And so, that if that's the case, then maybe that's what Jones has been trying to do. Unfortunately, it's still, they weren't that quick in the first half, and they dropped down like lethargic in the second half. So, but instead of, as Emma was saying, instead of going for something that's going to add some spark in it, Lele was shot, and he was shot by 60 minutes, I reckon. And instead of putting Brown on then, held on, the first change was Poljak with Katrumbas. So and that sort of slowed the midfield down. Johnny Katrumbas is a good young player, but I thought Poljak, his distribution and He's even got a, you know, what was might have been ineffective, but he's got to the point where he's getting in there and able to take shots on goals. So, you know, and he still had legs in him. So I don't understand. I don't know. It was, I think the question was asked of McKenna on Twitter. You know, was he working to a time schedule or to a rule? Were the subs pre-planned? And McKenna's come back and said no, they weren't. But, you know, geez, we've been doing the same subs at about the same time pretty much, haven't we, the last couple of weeks?
Anyway, well, we might leave that discussion point there because we've got a little bit more time. We can look to make one more choice, and this one is your choice, Grant. Do you remember the topics that we spoke that I mentioned before?
The Forever Sevens.
Sorry, the Forever Sevens. Right. So the Jets don't seem to be able to make that killer strike and take that. That sixth spot, we seem to get in a position and almost get a nosebleed because we've gone above our forever seventh position. Is this a mental thing, Grant, or do you think that it's just the way that the draw is? Because, look, the Jets' away form over the last couple of weeks has been absolutely atrocious. We've lost our last three. Yes, we won against Brisbane Roar 3-2, but then we lost the week before, the game before that against Victory. And we have a very poor... We have a run against Melbourne City, Wellington Phoenix, Central Coast and Sydney FC away from home to finish off our year. I mean, what do you think is the limiting factor in our ability to get sixth?
Okay, it's obviously it's not one thing. Firstly, in the past, we've never had the finances behind us to get the level of players where we can go and match up with, you know, in the, here come air quotes, the big clubs. The other thing that's very important, and you mentioned it there, about the schedule, and who we play, and, you know, we play Mariners, how many weeks was it, about 4 weeks, 5 weeks we played Perth three times in a row, or three times in 5 weeks or something. You know, the schedule is sorted for the television, and it's only sorted for the television for the big viewer numbers, which don't include us. I know Mariners suffer from a similar situation, but I don't care about them. But we certainly have issues in regards to how our schedule is set up, which does hurt us and does affect us when we go out on the road, because we can't get a roll on, because... Normally you come along and you think, well, we're going to play a couple of teams here. We might pick up a point here. We've got a chance to win there. But we're coming up against teams that are causing us, you know, some of the big name teams, they keep knocking us over. We keep getting injured players. And I think that, again, has a big part to play in it. The third thing gets back to, I suppose, you know, 1 and 3 are the same, I suppose, is the dollars in regards to the quality of players. We pride ourselves on, we've got 6-odd players that are homegrown. You know, is it time to move on past the homegrown and just spend the money on players that will win us games? It's all well and good to be able to say, you know, this guy's been playing with for such a long time, you know, and he's homegrown and we developed from him. But would he pick up a gig in any other A-League team? If not, the answer is no, and move on. So, and otherwise, we will be forever settlers.
So, Emma, at this stage last year, the Jets were well and truly, it appeared as though we were out of any chance of getting sixth. Sydney were on 29 points, we were on 23. As it stands this year, we're on 21 and in seventh, not eighth. And Western Sydney are only 3 points ahead of us. I guess that's a test to Sydney's dominance this year, and they've taken points off all the other teams. But I'd argue that our starting 11 is just as good as a number of the other teams. Certainly Western Sydney, certainly Perth Glories. Our first 11 should be able to compete, and we have been able to put out a consistent team over the last 4 weeks. You talked about a sports psychologist before, and what would you be expecting for bringing in someone like that? And why do you think the Jets have that seemingly glass ceiling in seventh spot.
I absolutely think they need to invest in the sports psychologist. I feel like we beat the teams we have no right to beat, and then we lose the teams we absolutely should beat. And to me, that just screams, you've got the attitude wrong. So I feel like they're going in and going, yeah, Adelaide, they got flogged last week and they're the bottom of the table. We've got this. And then for exactly that reason, they don't have it. Then when we play the big teams, we've got nothing to lose. So you don't have that messing with your mind. So I think that's a huge thing. And I'm sure the bigger teams invest more in it. I would add too, though, you know, I do think we do get screwed over on the timetable compared to the bigger teams because of the TV. But, you know, we're close to Perth in terms of performance this season, and Perth have got a rougher travel schedule than us, for sure. So I don't think that... I think this is definitely a multifactorial problem, but I feel like you've got to start looking at the attitude if it's constantly... we're getting winning games we shouldn't win, and then we're losing games we should win. And I actually really hate this point of the season where we've mathematically still got a chance, but it's just so frustrating to watch that pressure getting to them. And, you know, looking at Adelaide turning it around, I guess they had nothing else to lose. You know, when are we going to find that? I just don't feel like we are.
I guess there's probably...
When you just in regards to that, though, look at the team, you know, it's recognised that the Mariners are the smallest club in the league. But they, they go out one of the smallest budgets as well, the smallest fan group, a whole lot. But they have continuously, last year was shit, which everybody's pleased to see, but they've continuously hit above their weight, and it's never seemed to worry them whether they're playing a big team or a little team, as if they're playing a Sydney FC or a Jets. They'll come at them in the same sort of attitude.
But so, compare the way Ocon talks to the way Jones talks.
That's what I'm saying.
Jones is full of excuses and what we couldn't do because of who we were missing. Jones is in the media saying, I'm not getting enough from my international players. Ocon is protecting his players. Whenever the Mariners don't win, Ocon talks about what they did right, what they're going to do better, how they're growing as a team. It's a completely different mindset.
And that was the point I was going to make, because in one
Sorry.
Of the first, yeah, in one of the first games that when Ocon had them, they got done 4-0, and he came out and he said, I think they should have won. They played great. And everybody was sort of blown away with you watch the same game, Parlo. And but they got beat 4-0, and his attitude was, you played really terrific. What are you talking about? Have a look at it again. We should have won. We could have won. And I think it was against Victory, whether that come over or Melbourne City. But anyway, his attitude was just, you know, for a while, you know. And that's, you know, again, I talked to a Mariners supporter there just today, and he has made the same thing. He says he's got the Mariners players believing, and they believe in every game. And maybe exactly what you were saying, come up against a team coming last, this is in the bag. Because
Whereas what we have is players being told they're playing against each other for spots in the squad.
Yes.
Which,
yes.
Okay, yeah, it's good to have competition, but only to a point. Like, you need to have some faith in your core players. You can't say it's a free-for-all, and I'm sorry that you got a broken jaw, Coco, but you've been shit, so I'm going to tell the media that I'm mad at you until you step up. Like, it's, to me, that attitude isn't good enough, and no matter what the players say about, you know, being behind the coach, I feel like that I wouldn't perform in that kind of work environment.
You could argue that I guess we had that last year, and I don't want to bring up a Scott Miller versus Mark Jones debate, but I'm going to mention his name. We as a fan group, and it also looked like the players as well last year, really bought into Scott Miller. The Scott Miller who talked the talk, though sometimes he did talk in circles, but we really were believing that this guy could deliver something to us, and we were on the beginning of a really good journey with him. I think he had that psychology element right. He had the players believing. I mean, he didn't help us break the duck against Perth or the duck against Sydney, but he's certainly helped us beat the Mariners down at a place where we haven't won in almost 3,000 days. He helped us win down there twice. and also provide win with our biggest ever margin against them, a 4-2 win. So I think it's important. I think it's a combination of the draw, and for me, I'm looking at it, at the away games. These opportunities are always falling to the club to cement their spot when they are away from home. And our home form has been very good this year. It's been some of the best home form that we've seen in a while, but our away form on a similar vein has been very ordinary. And that's, I think, been our killer blow. Look, we might draw a line under there. We'll keep... that's some very good, robust debate. So we're going to obviously have the Jets... preview of the Central Coast Mariners, the F3 Derby this weekend at McDonald Jones Stadium on Sunday. But that's looking forward to come and be released on Friday morning. So that's our review, I guess, for the Adelaide game. I'd like to thank Emma. Thank you very much for coming along today.
Thanks for having me. Sorry, I was so cranky.
Oh, you don't have to worry about it. It's fine. And Grant, thank you very much for joining us as well, mate.
Absolute pleasure. And look, everybody out there in podcast land, don't forget, if you've got, say, Wednesday morning off, the Jets are playing, I can't pronounce their name, Liaoning Huiwin on 10 a.m. down at Ray Watt Oval.
Awesome. Get down there, get along, and see the Jets have a run, and Liaoning.
I'll try and do a bit of a live Facebook thing.
Ooh, that sounds awesome. Yeah. Can't wait for that.
Okay. Been fun. Emma, I love it when you get cranky.
That's lucky.
We want some passion. we need some passion. We're not seeing
I didn't swear, though. Lately. I'm pretty sure I didn't swear.
No, that's good, and that's fine. You're allowed to come back, and we don't have to. Well, you did swear earlier, so we do have to put the explicit tags
did
on this
I
podcast.
Did I get? Damn it, sorry.
You did, but that's all right.
I've been trying so hard.
Jesus.
Thank you very much.
Sorry about my blasphemy, everybody.
Blasphemy.
Thank you very much. Blasphemy ahoy. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening to the pod today. We hope that you enjoyed, the deep dive into a couple, not really a deep dive, but certainly the dive into a couple of topics that have been discussed amongst the fans. We hope that you enjoyed this pod, and if you'd like to leave us a review on iTunes, I'm sure that Ferns will be able to read them out for us on one of our next couple of pods. And you can also find us and tell your friends, get them to subscribe as well. So until next week, go the Jets!
Go the Jets!
Go the Jets!
Ah, you've already done that one. It's all over. And you did swear. You did swear.
Did I? Sorry. I've been trying so hard not to.
Did I swear? Shit.
I sort of just let them all out after that.
Oh, I'm down, Benjamin!